Welcome to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. I'm Lisa Thomas.
I'm Jen Siegel.
And I'm your host, Ben Robbins.
This is a show where we discuss everything from weird sex stuff
to online dating
to the challenges
of having kids and raising a family.
By the way, we each have two kids and we probably wouldn't listen to this podcast with them, but that's your call. Listener discretion is advised.
Lisa and Jen met on the first day of graduate school and have been friends ever since. For the last decade, while Lisa was running a sex therapy practice, Jen was raising her kids at home.
And Ben is just a guy who started a podcast because
he didn't want to pay for marriage counseling.
Cheap bastard.
Welcome to Family Affairs. Today we're talking about porn. Porn is much more readily available these days, as you know, and most people have an opinion about it one way or another. What is wrong with looking at porn? I was just reading an article on Psychology Today by Dr. David Lay that essentially was saying pornography was never intended to teach kids about sex, and sadly that's not what's happening, that they learn more about sex from porn online than they do in the classroom. And another point he made is that pornography is not the problem, you are, and that pornography is just an extension of other compulsive behaviors. What do you think about that? What's wrong with porn?
So all sexual behavior is learned. Nobody's born knowing how to be sexual. So people, kids, teenagers begin seeking out how to be sexual when they become interested in being sexual with a partner, with themselves. So I think pornography can be helpful if it's the content of kind of what it is. Mm-hmm. And I think because it's now more readily available with the use of technology, it doesn't give parents and teachers a free pass to not take a stand and not take a position, rather, on what's good, what's bad, what's hurtful, what's harmful. So that's kind of my position on it.
It gets tricky when you start to pin specific categories down or mm-hmm. specific aspects of porn and mm-hmm. label them as good or bad, because there's sort of this gray area.
Right.
And we've talked before about the importance of consent. Mm-hmm. And if somebody's into something that we think's weird, as long as it's not hurting anyone, then maybe that's okay. Maybe that's between them and their partner.
Right.
Well, and maybe if there was more discussion in school or religion, whatever, about sex, maybe we would, our kids wouldn't have to turn to porn. I mean, my oldest one is going into fifth grade, and this is a year you get growing and changing in school, mm-hmm. which is a very functional discussion of puberty and whatnot. But, and I think we've touched on this before, we don't teach our kids really about sex. We don't teach them how to have good sex, how to be a good partner, mm-hmm. how to do any of that. We just throw them out there and hope they're going to find their way. So what should we expect other than for them to seek out porn? Because where else are they going to find it?
You raise an interesting point. Porn isn't necessarily concerned with good sex or right. how to do sex well.
Right.
It's a fairly black and white depiction.
Yes.
And I wonder if there is an opportunity to talk about how to do sex well. I feel like you sort of get that from Cosmo when you're mm-hmm. in your 20s.
Right. Well, but that's all how to play. It's not girls how to have great sex. It's how to usually how to please your man.
Right.
Right.
You know, how to be a sex kitten in bed. It's really not for the benefit of the woman typically.
Right.
And it's usually not for the benefit of the man.
I was gonna say, it really doesn't usually work either.
Magazine selling strategy.
Right. Totally.
I think what you're talking about is relational porn, right? Pornography that depicts how people have sex when there's some sort of a connection or an attachment or perhaps a relationship, and how that looks different than sort of objectifying porn, mm-hmm. right? Where it's like we're focused on a body part, or we're focused on objectifying the person in the video. It's not really depicted as a loving, caring act. And so I think the danger with porn is that if children watch pretty hardcore pornography at an early age, then that can set their love maps and expectations for kind of how sex is supposed to look. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if they go out and begin participating in that, then, you know, is that going to be kind of the sex that they like? And are they going to be able to find suited partners to do that with?
Yeah, it's interesting. in some ways, there's so much porn and there's so much different porn.
Yeah.
I feel like when we were kids, or when I was a horny 14-year-old paying someone to get me a Hustler, mm-hmm. what I was looking at was a specific brand. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? In some ways, you could make the argument that with the universal access to porn now, there's so much of it that there's something for everyone.
Yes.
And you can look at average women now mm-hmm. in a way that you couldn't years ago.
That's true.
And maybe that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but how many people do you think are looking at average women, though?
I don't know, but I feel like amateur porn, if I had to guess, I've never looked at it, but no. I feel like amateur porn is probably pretty common on the internet.
Like XTube is all uploaded amateurs.
Really?
Mm-hmm. YouPorn?
YouPorn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of uploaded amateur stuff. And so clearly there is a market because those are huge websites.
Right. I think it's probably gained popularity in the last handful of years as mm-hmm. people kind of aged out and got sick. They got desensitized and I think got sick of looking at pornography where everybody looked perfect and just
hairless.
Yeah. I think everybody kind of got sick of that. They needed like the next thing.
Do you believe in porn addiction?
I believe that people can isolate and become addicted to pretty much anything if it's done in a compulsive fashion. Mm-hmm. When sex addiction or porn addiction, I think the danger becomes that oftentimes what's happening is people are masturbating, having orgasms, and looking at porn in like a circular fashion. And so it sort of starts to become an addiction to the way it makes you feel. So mm-hmm. it's not really looking at the imagery. Somebody mm-hmm. looks at imagery and doesn't masturbate. I don't know that it has quite the chemical effect that having an orgasm pairs up with.
And then you convince yourself you need to see that in order to get aroused.
Right. Well, if you think about like a drug addiction or an alcohol addiction, I mean, mm-hmm. there's a chemical change that mm-hmm. occurs that people become, you know, excited about. It feels good to mm-hmm. them. Most of the time when I talk to guys in my practice who are compulsively masturbating or compulsively watching porn, mm-hmm. they're in a lot of pain. And so they're using it as an avoidance tactic to like deal with their pain.
Like anybody would with drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
Well, and similarly with drugs and alcohol, there's probably a tolerance issue that happens right. and you probably mm-hmm. have to raise the bar occasionally.
Right.
To That's feel true. Something.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's any difference in a person who maybe looks at porn alone as a coping mechanism or as a habit, and a person who looks at porn with their sex partner?
No.
Is it any healthier either way?
Not necessarily. I think that it becomes unhealthy when it starts interfering with your daily functioning. Mm-hmm. But I don't necessarily think it's healthy or unhealthy to some people are very private. They don't want anyone to see what they're looking at. That's something that's, you know, personal to them. They don't feel comfortable showing who they're dating or who they're in a relationship with, exactly what kind of porn they like watching or what imagery that they're interested in. Mm-hmm. And some people are very open about it. I think that the couples that are open about it, I think that generally they have better sexual relationships because there's more vulnerability, there's more transparency in terms of what they like, what they want, and so they can they come closer to having the kind of sex they probably want to have, what really turns them on.
And does that come back to communication as well?
Yeah, probably.
Can you think of a time when you've suggested porn as a solution to a problem for people? And do you have the prescriptive authority to prescribe porn for my relationship? Is there some way we can make that happen?
Yes. So I have in the past, and it's funny, about 15 years ago, I ran across a series of videos. You probably have seen them advertised in all kinds of magazines. It's called the Better Sex Series. And they make... I mean, when I bought the series, it was mm-hmm. like a VHS tape. So I bought the VHS Better Sex series, and it was literally like 10 or 12 VHS tapes that dealt with like specific sexual problems. But one of the videos was mm-hmm. called couples pleasuring. And it depicted two couples, a younger couple and an older couple, mm-hmm. being sexual. Like, I think that they thought that they had pretty good sex and wanted to share with the world, like, what they were doing. Mm-hmm. Wow. And the video is actually pretty good. I mean, it's about an hour long. You spend about 20 minutes with each couple. Mm-hmm. And actually, the first, like, 10 or 15 minutes of the video is a good lesson in anatomy and physiology, which is interesting to think that most people have no idea. Like, it's good to kind of know where things are and what things do.
True.
Mm-hmm. And I like videos as teaching tools for my couples because then everybody has the same information. Like, because when people come in a room, oftentimes they have different, you know, levels of education in terms of like what good sex is, or maybe, I don't know. So it kind of brings, everybody's on the same page. We're working with information that's the same. Sometimes when you give a couple a book to read, one of them reads a book and the book, one of them doesn't, one of them skims it. Mm-hmm. So if they just watch a DVD together, I think that it's helpful.
How common is it for people to come in and talk to you about porn?
It comes up.
Yeah.
It definitely comes up. I mean, I do a lot of couples therapy, so talking about porn can, you know, I question couples when they come in, tell me about your physical relationship in terms of frequency and intensity. And part of what I eventually talk about or ask them is masturbation habits. And when I ask about masturbation habits, I ask if they use pornography or if they just masturbate without the use of technology.
They go hand in hand, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I prescribe taking a technology break.
Oh, right? Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, go ahead and masturbate, but try to do it free of technology just for a little while. It can kind of help to reset somebody's arousal patterns and make them more responsive in their relationships. Mm-hmm. Makes you more responsive.
Do you see a trend that when you have people come in that talk about porn, is it typically, is a wife complaining, or what does that usually look like?
Sometimes. Usually the presenting problem is that it's her low desire and he is supplementing with pornography and masturbation. And he's asking, is this a good thing that I'm like outsourcing, right? Or is this creating more problem? Because really in the end, he wants to be doing more of this with her. But if he's looking at a lot of pornography and masturbating a lot more, he's a lot more sexualized than she is. So it's like we're sort of at two different places.
And are women typically like, it hurts my feelings you're looking at porn, or is it more like, yeah, it's great because then he's out of my hair?
It depends on the session.
Interesting.
I've heard both ways.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
I think there's a tendency to blame porn, and I'm probably using the wrong terminology, but when people talk about alcoholism, they say that the drinking is a symptom more than it's the definition of the problem. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
And I sort of feel the same way about porn in that if you're taking too long with your wife because you look at too much porn, you could certainly blame that on looking at too much porn, or you could blame that on jerking off three times when you're planning on being with your wife later that night. Mm-hmm. And that's where I wonder if it's really about the porn or it's about the compulsive behavior. Mm-hmm. Because I might find a great recipe on Pinterest for 7-layer dip, and if I jerk off to that three times, I'm going to have a hard time with my wife later, and it's not about the dip.
And right? A hard time in the grocery store.
You're going to be very aroused in a Mexican restaurant.
Yes. Well, because like you said at the beginning, porn is not the problem, you are. That was what we led off with. And so does that bear itself out that if you're becoming compulsive or something, there's always a scapegoat. Is it really not the porn, or is it what's ever going on with you? Like you said, if you're an alcoholic, you usually don't go to alcohol just because you absolutely love the taste of liquor all day long. It's usually because you need to escape from something that's bothering you in your head. Mm-hmm. So
right. It kind of comes back to just dealing with feelings, right? And, you know, it's different when you're not in a relationship and when you're in a relationship, right? Because sometimes when people aren't in a relationship and they want to feel like they're continuing to have like a solo sex life, using pornography can be a way to feel like you're in connection with something, even if it's not connecting back to you. But when you're in a relationship, I think you really need to think about kind of how much you're going online or looking at pornography and what ends up happening in the relationship as a result of your choices. Because usually when I talk with couples, you know, we're talking a lot about just how people feel. And, you know, what are your expectations for your sex life? What contributes to you wanting to be sexual? So we're kind of unpacking all that.
But there are ways to use porn in a relationship that are healthy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can use it for educational purposes to kind of learn how to better do something so you have like more sexual self-confidence. Like if you want to learn how to give better blowjobs, or if you want to learn, you know, some people sort of say, I don't have any game.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say, well, why don't you go online and watch some videos about like striptease or, you know, how do you create an atmosphere that's kind of like exciting and sexy? Like some people kind of need some help with that.
Because none of us were ever taught any of that.
No.
It's we're supposed to just know what to do.
Right. They didn't teach us that in school.
No.
How to have game.
No, that would be an excellent class. How to have game.
How to have game.
Yes.
I think the other thing that people, maybe people don't forget this. I forget this because I was raised in an insulated, traditionally Catholic family. But for most of my life, I didn't know women to look at porn. I thought porn was exclusively a source of men's shame and that nothing else. And I think maybe it's a function of the internet or millennials or freedom. I'm not sure what exactly caused the change, but I understand now that women do look at porn quite a bit, almost as much as men, maybe as much as men, depending on how much they admit it. But it's sort of forces us to deal with a common complaint, which is that porn isn't really designed for women or made for women.
No.
That there's maybe different requirements.
Yes, I think there are different requirements, I think. But although, I don't know, what would that look like if women made porn by women for women? How would that look? Would that look different, really?
I've seen examples of it that only look like traditional porn to me, but it's made by women. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anything that looks different because it's made by a woman.
You can't look at it and be like, chick made that. That was not a dude. Look at all the flowers. It looks like a Stay Free commercial. Sometimes I imagine like a tampon commercial on the beach.
That's an excellent point. Yeah.
Right.
Some soft focus.
Yes.
Maybe
running
a warm
on the beach.
Fire, bare skin rug.
Yeah. See, and therein lies also the stereotype is that women want the romance part of it. Like we want, you know, to make love down by the fire with candles and wine. And that's really not true, at least amongst my peers and the people I speak to about that type of thing. That is just not really the truth.
So I remember when I was in college, so this is, you know, in the 90s, I came across an author by the name of Nancy Friday. And Nancy Friday wrote a book called Women on Top. And basically what it is it's a book about women's sexual fantasies organized by category. Okay, so she had men in uniform, threesomes, one-night stands, where basically women, she did like a casting call where she asked women to write in their sexual fantasies, and then she just categorized them. And so table of contents, you can look for exactly what you want, go to that chapter and read all these women's, and then she did the same for men. That book is called Men on Top, but I came across the women's book first.
Sort of like a penthouse forum for women.
I had never knew, first of all, how creative people could be when it came to sex. And second of all, it really opened my eyes that women are sexual creatures and have desires and are interested in sex. And these are the kinds of things that they're interested in.
That is interesting. I think there is a misconception that women don't really like sex or don't really enjoy sex. And that's just really not true. Especially as I get older, I feel like, and in your 30s, it's so much different than your 20s, and it just gets different and different, and I think better as you get older.
I think we need to talk to a woman who's open about her interest in pornography and willing to discuss it on air. First, we're going to take a quick break, but when we return, we'll have a conversation with friend of the show, freelance writer, Alexa Kosinski, about what type of porn women like to look at. Welcome back to Family Affairs with Lisa Thomas and Jen Siegel. I'm your host, Ben Robbins. We are talking to special guest Alexa Kosinski, a friend of the show and freelance writer. And today we're talking about porn, and more specifically, what it means to women to look at porn. I've never really thought about this myself, but most porn is not made for women. And from what I understand, women don't care for most porn that's made for men. And we're going to get your take on that, Alexa. How do you feel?
I guess I feel it. I don't want to say I hate this word, but I'm going to say that I find it problematic.
Oh, that's good.
It's a worst catch-all term for I don't like something. But I still use it. So
it implies that you have hope for it, though. It's problematic, but you haven't totally dismissed the idea. You just said you use it. So
yeah, all the time.
What makes porn better for women, or what would make it better? Because there's obviously a business opportunity here.
I think the problem is women don't really all like the same thing. In fact, they like so much, like there's more of a variety of what women like. I mean, with men, it's pretty basic, you know, it's women doing anything with anybody. And for women, it's more contextual and it depends on their mood. And it's different. I've never had friends that we have all agreed on what turns us on.
We were just talking a minute ago about how repulsive the term lovemaking is to most of us. And I think
we hate it.
Yeah. My go-to in my head about what women want is they want lovemaking porn. Mm-mm. They want bearskin rugs and eye contact and covers.
No, my husband and I have actually gone and bought porn together. And my thing is always, I don't want porn where you turn it on and they're just banging. Mm-hmm. I like the, my sink has stopped working and I need to call the plumber. Like, I need a story. I need a plot. Mm-hmm. I'm fine the lead up and then the banging, but I don't want just that.
Like, there needs to be with the bang shot.
Yeah, there needs to be a little bit of a build up, a story. So I prefer a little bit of a story, but that's just me.
Even if it's cheesy
totally. And it's gonna be cheesy.
Pizza box.
Oh, it's gonna be cheesy. Yeah. It's right. Not gonna be.
Well, because I think part of women's arousal is the anticipation.
Mm-hmm. And having somebody maybe that you didn't expect finding you really attractive, being like, mm-hmm. I had a fucker. I mean, whatever it is.
Right.
I need a bit of a story, a build up first. But
I don't.
No.
But.
Well, that therein lies the difference.
Right. I think women are more into aesthetics versus men. I think men, you know, are like, hey, it's a girl. That works.
Exactly.
Like a girl.
Well, let's even talk about, and this again may not be timely by the time it comes out, but look at how people freaked out over Janet Jackson's nipple. I mean, it was literally a federal case. Everybody in the world saw what's his name's dick the other night on the Cavs game, LeBron James.
All right.
Nobody's still talking about that five days later. Janet Jackson, we talked about her nipple.
For a year.
We're still talking about it. But LeBron James' dick is old news already, not even a week later.
And interestingly enough, his dick had that same sterling silver sun piercing that Janet Jackson wore.
That Janet had.
Nobody's talking about that.
It's amazing.
What is up with that? So, yeah, it's interesting that the dick is no big deal, but the nipple was a huge deal.
Right.
How do women feel about plastic surgery and sort of unrealistic looking people in pornos? Because I'm very sensitive to this.
No, it's out. I think it was trendy and it's out now. It doesn't look good to be overstuffed anymore.
Overstuffed is an interesting word. Mm-hmm. I like that. Porn is problematic because of overstuffing.
Overstuffing.
Right.
Well, and it just sets up expectations. I mean, I have two boys, and, you know, with technology, I got to be really on top of that. And my chief concern is that they're going to go online and see a whole bunch of girls that they are never going to actually hook up with in real life. They're going to have all these unrealistic expectations of what to expect in terms of body type or porn that, you know, girls are going to want to take it in the ass when they're 16 years old. I mean, this is not real life. And so my big issue with porn is the unrealism. And then if you get kids that don't know any better or people or, you know, Nintendo playing men who have never left their mother's basement, they're like, yeah, I've been playing video games in my mother's basement for 10 years and I'm totally going to go score a chick like that because that's what they all look like.
Right.
So,
well, I think, you know, the problematic part about pornography is, and it is kind of an epidemic, I think that the problem becomes, you know, people are looking at porn for so long and to such a depth that they are incapable of functioning in like real world relationships. I've had clients that have come to me in my office because they have so much sexual anxiety I've had guys that are in their 30s and haven't lost their virginity, and it's all about sexual anxiety because the porn has led up to a performance issue where they feel like they can't function.
That's really interesting.
Right, and that's how, you know, it's a technology change, right? Like with the birth of the internet, we had the birth of sexual dysfunction, right? There wasn't so much sexual dysfunction before. There was just 2D porn in a magazine, right? Like now we have moving video. It's very arousing. Guys are watching this. People are watching this for hours and hours and hours on end. And it really is screwing up their arousal patterns and their ability to be able to get an erection with a woman in real life who looks like a real woman.
What are your personal experiences with porn and shame and maybe sort of cultural background? Because I'm culturally Catholic. I went to 12 years of Catholic school. There's some things I can't separate in terms of shame and sex because that's how it's taught. That's how it's learned. And I wonder if you guys associate porn with shame or if you associate sex with shame.
I do not.
You don't?
No, I was raised Jewish. We are pro-sex people. Mm-hmm. There's no real shame associated with sex or in our, my culture. So I never had the shame sort of, you know.
You just don't know
banged
that.
Into me. No.
No pun intended.
No pun intended. Alexa, that's exactly what I was thinking.
What's your position on this, Alexa? Because you don't have a religious background, correct?
Correct. I was not raised with anything, so blank slate, I guess. But no, I don't have shame around it. I mean, I don't want people knowing my keyword porn search. I mean, there's a little bit of
weirdness.
Not your business, but I mean, like, the stuff that I look up is, you know, weird. It does get weird because you get bored of things, so you look up crazier and crazier stuff. Or at least I do.
That's a good point.
I mean,
and see,
you escalate yourself.
And that's what Lisa was saying.
Yeah.
And then you have a 30-year-old virgin who has performance anxiety.
Yeah, what's weird is it's hard for me to imagine. I mean, I certainly know what some of the more extreme porn acts I've seen are. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me to imagine that being arousing to the person on the receiving end.
Right.
Does that make sense? That it's sort of a perspective issue?
Mm-hmm. I remember about 10 years ago starting to notice a trend of college age freshmen and sophomore guys that were coming in to see me as a sex therapist because they couldn't get erections when they were going to have sex, and they thought that their world was ending, right? They came in and they were so distraught over losing an erection with a girl in a dorm room, and they were coming to me and saying, like, fix me, what do I need to do? And I was like, just put down the porn.
Right.
Like, put it away for 20 minutes and, you know, you'll reset your arousal patterns.
But what you said, Ben, to bring it full circle, when you said you watch some of those crazy things and it's hard to imagine that the receiving end is enjoying it, I think that's the whole point back to porn that's made for men by men.
Right.
Because, right, the woman is just there to get fucked, not to actually have an orgasm or enjoy it.
Receive
She's just
pleasure.
There as the object of what he's fucking.
So should female porn or porn that appeals to women, should there be a POV change? Do you want to see POV porn for women?
I do in theory, but I have never experienced it, so I don't know what that looks like. I mean, the thing is, what I don't want is I don't want to see a bunch of kissing and hand holding.
Exactly.
And, you know, like, that doesn't interest me. That's romance, and that's fine, and that has its own place. But if I'm looking for porn, I'm looking for sex. I'm not looking, you know, not looking to see how you're a couple.
And that's what we were talking about before. Nobody wants to watch somebody making love down by the fire with the candles lit and all that stuff. You want a pull my hair, slap my ass, fuck me type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want Christian Grey. I want Christian Grey to come over to my house.
Why do you think they sold 50 million books? Because he's, an archetype.
Because he's what we want. Uh-huh.
So what do the men look like in your porn minds?
They are rich and silent.
Are they flawless?
A helicopter, like Christian Grey had. They fly in on a helicopter.
Helicopter dick.
What do they look like for real? I think they are masculine, right?
There's a big, yes, it's a man.
Masculine, good looking.
Alexa, jump in here anytime.
I prefer guys who are not cut. I don't like muscly men. I like either thin or actually a little bit pudgy, like a little bit more realistic.
Like POV of a big
doughy white man boobs flopping, just going down on you in a crappy van.
See, even to take it one step further, I like older men.
Okay.
So now we can add older floppy.
I was trying to catch some hypocrisy here where you guys would crave the kind of fake man that sort of parallels the fake women.
What would that be, though? What, a man with like a huge dick implant? Like, how do you, what is a fake? What is that, though?
Well, I think like flawless abs, tan skin.
No, see, all that dark really doesn't handsome. Do it for me, and it doesn't sound like Alexa. That's a total myth.
More than aesthetics, I think, you know, women want men that are confident. That are sexually confident,
a man's
right?
Man.
Taking charge, moving it from one thing to the next. Like, let's do this.
Now let's do this.
Interested
and now
in
let's
my,
do this.
Interested in my pleasure.
Yes.
Knows how to have oral sex.
Thank you.
Hello.
So, oh my God, that's the biggest one.
Absolutely.
So POV, oral sex, is something that would interest you.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of blowjob right, videos out
because
there.
Because most women are incapable of having an orgasm through intercourse.
Okay. So straight intercourse.
I'm one of those girls. So if we're just going to have straight intercourse, I'm not going to come.
So it's you
not,
just want to see an average guy go down on you.
I want it to be a part of the sexual script that ends with sex.
After he delivers a pizza.
But I firmly believe after he delivers my pizza.
And does my dishes.
But I believe like everybody should have an orgasm, right? Like I'm not here as a servicing activity to you.
That's right.
Right?
We service each other.
We service each other.
Right.
It's a two-way street. It's a mutual pleasuring activity.
I do want to bring up one woman. It's Allison Stevenson. She writes for Vice. And I don't know if you guys will get a chance to look at this, but she wrote an article about how no penetration. She basically has a guy come over. He performs oral on her. He gets nothing out of it and he leaves.
Wow.
And that's right now, that's her thing. That's what she's doing. And it was a very empowering read.
Wow. And how does she talk about this? I mean, because this sounds like it could be a bad Craigslist post, right?
Yeah.
Where you post like, woman in bed, knock on door, come in, pleasure me with oral sex and leave.
Get the fuck out.
Right, get the fuck out.
No creep.
So like, how is she, like she's just talking about this as an idea that she really connects with? Or like, what's the, like, how does she talk about this? I'm so interested.
Well, she talks about it in terms of her past experience of being with men not in a relationship and having penetrative sex and getting less than they were getting out of it. And so she wanted to turn the tables and change that. And she didn't know how to do it because she said every time she was with a guy, you know, they would just start going for it. They would just go for vaginal like immediately, and she didn't know how to stop them. And she said she couldn't stop them and she would feel guilty.
It's the porn epidemic.
Yeah, so she just decided to, you know, she found a new guy and then laid down new terms.
See, and I think women are responsible for the bad sex that they're having. Because I think if you have a sexual experience with a guy and he is not into your pleasure, you have two choices. Either end the relationship or have a sexual intervention with him. If you continue to have sex with him, you're just feeding into that.
But I think I agree with you, but I think the question is why do women do that? And maybe that needs to be explored a little bit.
Because they have no sexual self-esteem. They need to have, like, this is, because a lot of women don't understand how their own bodies work. We rely on men to teach us, like, how our bodies work. Which is ridiculous.
I also think there has something to do with women feeling slutty or shamed by wanting to have sex or wanting to be pleasured. I think that for years and years, it's always been women pleasure men. I mean, like we said, look at the porn. It's all by men for men. So women naturally wanting to be people pleasers just by nature of being women, I think, succumb to that because you're thinking, I have this man, he takes care of me, I get this, I get that. I think women trade often sexual pleasure and orgasms for things like stability and an income and things like that. They're like, he's going to take care of me, so if I don't have an orgasm every time, that's okay, I'm going to let that go.
Like it's like a decent trade.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think
a lot of women make that trade. I wouldn't make that trade.
I wouldn't either. I think go get an education, figure out how to support yourself, and don't rely on anybody for anything.
Do you think you guys always had sexual confidence in that regard?
Where,
did you have to learn it?
I was not sexually confident. I was like one of those girls who got boobs early. Mm-hmm. And wore a t-shirt over my swimsuit till I was 18 years old, like totally embarrassed, didn't want anybody to see me. And I will tell you, I don't think I became more sexually confident until like my mid to late 39, my mid to late 30s. I was always like, let's turn the lights off. Don't touch me there. You know, it was ridiculous.
So well after you were married?
After I had kids.
After you had kids.
After I had kids. And after I like got myself back to, it kind of all came at once. We might have touched on this in another one. Once my youngest turned 5 and they kind of don't need you as much anymore, I kind of got my life back, and that included the sex part of it.
I think that's well said. We need to take a quick break. I want to thank Alexa for being with us. You all know her as the Wooden Slurpee on Twitter. Thanks again. We enjoyed your input.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. We are moving on, talking about porn, talking about the universal access to porn and how it's affected society, how it affects children, how it affects marriages. And specifically, I want to talk a little bit about a term that I believe we owe to Jon Stewart and The Daily Show. Procrasturbation is a wonderful word that describes masturbating when maybe you're not actually even in the mood to do it, but just avoiding other things with compulsive behavior. First of all, what's the problem with looking at porn when you're not turned on? If you've got the time.
I don't know that it's necessarily a problem. It could lead to a very bad habit, right? Where you're just procrastinating because you're looking at porn that you're not even really interested in.
Tennis right? elbow.
Yeah. Things, yeah. Things
soft like hands.
Carpal tunnels. Hairy palms.
Palms, obviously. I mean, I guess back to the issue of sort of overstimulation and overusing porn, I sort of see more problem with that, or maybe with associating porn with stress. That would be my concern, is that you look at porn every time you're stressed, avoiding something. At what point do you start to associate sex with stress?
Yeah, that would seem like it would pair itself up. It's like a classical conditioning where soon you would just associate stress with porn.
Right. Mm-hmm. That would be my fear.
Right. Pavlov. Or it could happen with anything, right? I mean, if you associate porn with anything, I mean, it can go downhill eventually.
Right.
I mean, it's everything else, everything in moderation.
Well, and I guess if you have marital trouble because your husband looks at too much porn or because your wife looks at too much porn, it doesn't really matter why they're looking at too much porn. Or maybe it does. Maybe there's a bigger issue in the marriage. Maybe your spouse has some sort of psychological condition that needs to be addressed.
Well, or you just need to figure out, like, why are we spending so much time apart that you have all this time to look at porn? Like, what's going on with that?
I don't think it's necessarily always an indicator of unhappiness or dissatisfaction on the part of the guilty party. I think that, referring to the term procrasturbation, I think people can be looking at porn out of boredom or out of avoidance of something they don't want to deal with. I think there probably are times when the type of porn or, you know, the nature of it can be detrimental to how you view women or how you view sex. I think that's a little bit different territory. But I know for a fact that there are a lot of women who feel insult from husbands looking at porn. And it's literally not an option in their marriage to have a spouse that's looking at porn, which probably leads to a lot of guys hiding in their basements or hiding in the stall at work looking at porn.
Mm-hmm. Is that a self-esteem issue? Is that a cultural issue? Like, you brought up religion. I mean, is that just a guilt thing?
It's kind of a control issue, I think.
Interesting.
Like wanting to control somebody's behavior. I mean, I think if you get into a marriage, you get into a relationship, and that is the deal that's negotiated up front, right? That's different than, you know, somebody midway sort of saying, you know, I just don't think that I like you looking at pornography anymore.
Right.
That sort of sounds like a control issue.
Right. And really, at the end of the day, if your husband is just looking at porn occasionally, maybe he's got some movies, maybe he does it online, I don't understand why that's such a... I guess I don't take it personally. You know, is it an issue of women taking it personally? Like, you like her better than me. You wish I was like her, and I'm not going to do A, B, and C that this woman is clearly allowing this guy to do on there. I mean, listen, if you want to look at that, great, because then maybe I'm not going to have to perform that later tonight. That's great. Go look at it.
Right.
Do your thing. But I just don't take it personally. I don't think it's an insult to me. I think it's pretty human nature.
And there's a lot of confidence in that too, right? I mean, you must not feel like your husband's cheating on you if he's looking at porn. And some people actually associate it with cheating behavior, that it's infidelity.
I suppose that's true, but I just have a hard time saying that you're cheating if you're by yourself. I mean, if there's not another person physically there, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. And that's just a difference of opinion. That's just a matter. Some people are going to, obviously, lots of people are going to disagree with that. But I don't see how you can be cheating when the other person is not anywhere near you.
Right, like it seems safer.
Yeah.
Right, if you're just like in a room with a computer by yourself versus like at a bar with a guy friend.
Well, and is that the alternative? Mm-hmm. If you're like, I don't want you looking at porn, you can't ever look at it, are they going to go somewhere else, like a bar or something? And I mean, it seems a lot safer.
Sure seems like it.
Yeah, it seems a lot safer to be at home looking at people he's never going to meet.
Right.
Doing something versus going out at a bar and checking girls out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think men who are morally above looking at porn are plumbed any differently from the rest of us. I would imagine that they still have that same biological need to procreate that right. sort of drives all of this. So maybe we need to talk to somebody who's a little bit morally or ethically above porn and find out how they ejaculate.
Mm-hmm. We'll ask them. I would like some details, please.
Probably in their sleep.
No?
Probably.
Probably. Or probably looking at porn in the family van when their wife thinks they're dropping the kids off.
True.
It's just hard for me to believe as a man that there's men who are above masturbation.
That can't be. Isn't it a biological drive?
Well, there are some men. And I think, again, this is, you know, sexual values and attitudes, like mm-hmm. how you were raised. I think if somebody is very religious, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, being sexual, masturbating... I've met these guys. Like, they really, they didn't grow up doing it. They don't do it. Like, they look to their spouses and their relationships to satisfy all of their sexual needs. So, you know, it can be a good thing and a bad thing, because I think it can put a lot of pressure on a relationship to kind of provide for one person's sole outlet. Mm-hmm. Like, if a person doesn't mm-hmm. have any other outlet, then... You know, it's a lot of pressure.
That's what I think. That's what I was thinking.
It's sort of like you're responsible for somebody else's sexual happiness.
Right. There's it's like a full-time job.
Right.
It can be.
Depending on your spouse.
But most of the time, you know, the men that I meet that are against masturbation, they've been raised with a very strict religious upbringing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And find out how they ejaculate.
Mm-hmm. We'll ask them. I would like some details, please.
Probably in their mm-hmm. sleep.
No?
Probably. Or probably looking at porn in the family van when their wife thinks they're dropping the kids off.
True.
It's just hard for me to believe as a man that there's men who are above masturbation.
That can't be. Isn't it a biological drive?
Well, there are some men, and I think, again, this is, you know, sexual values and attitudes, like mm-hmm. how you were raised. I think if somebody is very religious, mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, being sexual, masturbating... I've met these guys. Like, they really, they didn't grow up doing it. They don't do it. Like, they look to their spouses and their relationships to satisfy all of their sexual needs. So, you know, it can be a good thing and a bad thing, because I think it can put a lot of pressure on a relationship to kind of provide for one person's sole outlet. Mm-hmm. Like, if a person doesn't mm-hmm. have any other outlet, then... You know, it's a lot of pressure.
That's what I think. That's what I was thinking.
It's sort of like you're responsible for somebody else's sexual happiness.
Right. It's like a full-time job.
Right.
It can be.
Depending on your spouse.
But most of the time, you know, the men that I meet that are against masturbation, they've been raised with a very strict religious upbringing.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a part of it. I can't imagine. I know people who have dabbled in it for the sake of self-control, or maybe to see if they could go without it for a while.
Right. Celibacy, like they just...
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, once upon a time, we were talking about, you know, maybe as teenagers, we were talking about if you're struggling with being a little bit premature, maybe knock one out earlier in the day when you're planning on getting lucky, because you'll have a little more stamina.
That's the best fix for premature ejaculation. Right. When somebody comes in and they're like, I'm a premature ejaculator, I'm like, you know, what are your masturbation habits? And if they're not masturbating, I'm like, we need to start that immediately.
Wow.
Have you had a religious client? And I'm not trying to throw religion under the bus. Mm-hmm. I guess I just associate
strong religious views with the need to not masturbate. But have you ever had someone come in who required the advice of you need to masturbate more? And they said, my religion prevents that. I can't do that. That's not on the table.
Yeah, I have. I'm trying to think about the specifics, but I know I've had that case. I've had couples where, you know what comes to mind? I've had couples where they come in because they want to procreate and he's having trouble. He's ejaculating before he's even inside of her.
Wow.
Right? So it's like they come to me like, this is our problem. We need to.
I know.
We need to fix this.
They come and, to me.
Yeah, they come to me. And, you know, so then what I talk to them about is, would it be possible for you to masturbate in the presence of your wife? Like, let's start that where he's touching himself just to try and build up some control.
And he'd rather do that than do it in the bathroom on his own in the shower.
It's not about rather. I think
it's
about
like what's ability, it's but not you can't.
It's can't.
See, oh my goodness.
Right.
That seems like a tall order for
it's
somebody.
Like a sexual quandary.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But totally fixable. And, you know, when you work as a sex therapist, you have to have respect for everybody's situations, right? It's like I'm not an authority on telling people what's right or what's wrong. I have to work with what people come in and present to me.
And practice like, your poker face.
Right.
I was just thinking that. You have to have a certain ability to control your reaction and avoid the that's what she said or no pun intended.
I think over time
it seems to come to my mind every 10 seconds.
You just become desensitized to it over time.
I'm a 12-year-old boy at heart, I think.
12-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Speaking of 12-year-old boys, they look at a lot of porn, I'm assuming. I'm going to go out on a limb and say if you have 12-year-old boys, which you almost have
12-year-old I was going to say that frightens me. I have like a 10.5-year-old boy.
And Lisa almost has a 12-year-old girl. And I feel like that's probably when it all starts. I think no matter what you tell your kids about porn or what kind of parental controls you put on your computers, I think they will find it through that same friend.
I was going to say there's always that friend.
That goes
there's
to the gas station.
Always that friend.
That's the one.
Whose parents aren't watching and paying attention and are like, sure, go up to your room and play on the iPad for 3 hours. Great idea.
Everyone has that friend, no matter how responsible their own parents
are. Everybody does.
Right.
And there's the friend who's smarter than his parents, too.
Yes.
So
yes.
I think my opinion on this is that maybe rather than trying to prevent your kids from looking at it, maybe you should try to educate your kids.
I did.
So that they have a healthy attitude towards sex from the very beginning.
Right.
And they're not going to be influenced by seeing something outrageous on the internet.
And I've kind of had that conversation with my son because I've started to say I would like for you all to be in the common area with your iPad or whatever, just because the thought of 3 10.5-year-old boys in his bedroom watching, you know, quote unquote Minecraft videos for 2 hours. Right. I'm like, all it takes is 5 minutes to throw something inappropriate in there and whatever. And so I have actually had the conversation with him that I understand it's natural to want to look at that. I understand that all that's normal. And I told him, I said, my concern is that you're going to think that's typical. Is that you're going to go out into the world and expect that girls are going to look a certain way, behave a certain way, do certain things that you're probably not really going to come into contact with in the real world. And I don't want to set you up for unrealistic expectations as you become into this. So I actually have had that conversation with him. Now, I don't know if you listened, I'll probably have to have it 700 more times, but we've started that conversation.
I think it's like anything. I mean, I think you can blame video games for violence, or you can blame parents who don't teach their kids about morality and violence.
Right.
I tend to feel the same way about porn and think maybe rather than criminalizing porn, we should maybe have a strategy for teaching our kids what is healthy when they encounter things like that. What's acceptable behavior? What's normal? And I hate to put those labels on things, but I think in my mind, for my daughters, I know what I want them to accept as normal.
Right. Well, and I think it's about arming your children with information. I mean, whether it's, you know, my son has a good friend in his class that has two moms,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it is, they're going to be exposed to all of it. And I would much rather arm my child with the ability to handle these things and not sit there slack-jawed going, I have no idea what this is, and I have no idea how to respond to it and be appropriate and know what to do in a situation like this. I almost feel like you're just sort of leaving them to the wolves in some cases with some of that.
Right.
So I just think that it is. Everything should be a conversation.
And I think never underestimate the power of taking a position as a parent, because no matter what kids are going to do, when you've taken a position and they understand the way that you feel and they understand, right, the culture of the family and the morals. And my belief is they make better decisions when faced with all kinds of things.
Like,
we can't control what they're going to see, but we want them to have an understanding of what we believe.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I agree with that. Even though I'm culturally Catholic, I don't agree with all of that stuff anymore. But in retrospect, I'm glad that I had some direction. I'm glad that it was fundamentally rooted in morality. Mm-hmm. And maybe the details have changed for me now as a grown man, but I think it's okay to give kids some direction, even if they only have it because of their parents.
Mm-hmm. It's a solid foundation.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of all you can do is have a foundation, and they got to build it up from there. But
right.
you got to give them that stuff.
Take a position. Mm-hmm. I always found that the kids who had like no supervision or their parents never took a position on anything,
mm-hmm.
they were the most wild because they had no, you know, nothing was really grounding them.
What can we say about the good that the internet might have brought to the porn situation? I know it's easy to say the internet's bad, porn's bad, now it's everywhere, society's crumbling, but there have actually been studies that correlate, and this is sort of Freakonomics territory, but they attempt to correlate the advent of the internet and pornography with lowered rates of sexual crimes and maybe creating an outlet for people who otherwise would have acted out violently.
I don't know. What does accessibility to this kind of stuff do to this generation? I mean, we grew up so differently
mm-hmm.
that it could be, I mean, it can be educational, but I mean, really, it does come down to parenting, I feel like.
I mean, take, and this is not a good use of porn, but as an example of something we never had, revenge porn. The idea that you can shame somebody who shared intimate photos with you or had an encounter with you.
Right. Well,
that you documented.
That's how Kim Kardashian got famous.
You're absolutely right.
That's right.
That's what it comes down to.
That's what happened.
Yes, but then there's also kids that kill themselves because somebody's done
right.
that.
Right.
True.
Right.
So how do you know which way it's going to go?
It's a scary thing. I know there's new legislation that prevents it. I believe somebody just went to jail mm-hmm. for hosting a revenge porn site.
Oh, yes. I know what you're talking about.
It's sort of a hot topic. I think there are changes happening in that regard.
Well, I mean, it's like the internet. We had no laws, nothing in place 15 years ago. I mean, they have to kind of, we have to keep figuring this out as we go.
Cyber attorneys.
Yeah.
It's like a new niche market in law.
And there's always lots of precedents set on mm-hmm. that type of online harassment, online bullying, online humiliation, that sort of thing. They're always setting new precedents because it is the First Amendment right versus your rights to your privacy. And if you've shot that picture out to somebody, do you lose the right to privacy and controlling where that picture goes? Obviously you do.
If you're underage, you certainly never forfeit that right.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's a scary thing too. If you're if you're 14 and you send that photo to your 14-year-old boyfriend,
mm-hmm.
you've just committed an act of child pornography. And the girl who took her own photo
mm-hmm.
is committing an act of child pornography and distribution.
Are a sex offender.
Correct.
You're a felon at that point.
You are. And kids don't think about that.
No.
I mean, they don't think about that kind of thing. And so that is a scary thing too.
Right. Well, there's big consequences now. It seems
yes.
like the consequences are a lot bigger than when we grew up 20 years ago.
Mm.
So the world is more complicated now.
And we have things like 50 Shades of Grey, which I consider a very diluted version of pornography that's somehow universally attractive to people who don't necessarily want to go look for porn on the internet.
It's like a socially acceptable form.
Right.
Even though I have to say I've read the books,
right,
but I read them on my Kindle. You would not have. I actually saw women a couple of years ago, like at the pool with the actual book in their hand. I was like, no, I'm not doing, I'm reading it on the down low.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I didn't want anybody else. It was, it was kind of like porn. Like didn't want anybody else to read it because everybody knew it was this whole like quote unquote mommy porn thing. And it was this whole thing. And it opened up this idea that women, I think it opened up an idea that women want to be controlled at some point, and that was really attractive to women for whatever reason.
Are you more embarrassed if you hand somebody your phone and they open it to realize you are reading 50 Shades of Grey or Pornhub?
Probably Pornhub.
Okay. So it is acceptable.
It is a soft porn. Yeah, it definitely is.
Is it any different from grocery store raunch? You know, once upon a time, there were romance novels in the checkout aisle.
That's true. I have to cop to, I've never actually read a romance novel before, but this was pretty explicit.
Yeah.
It was very explicit, but it was also this fantasy, you know, this amazingly gorgeous 26-year-old who had risen to through the ranks of corporate life and owned all these companies and flies a helicopter. I mean,
was abused as a child.
So of course then comes in the women who can care for him.
Like the empathy.
That was sort of the part for me that kind of grossed me out, was her need to like take care of him and fix him. Mm-hmm. Let me fix your problems. Oh, you're this way. You like to beat my ass during sex, but I want to fix you and make you okay again.
Typical.
It is typical. Typical. It was almost insulting. It's like, well, I'll do all these things with you and you can get the riding crop out and we'll go into the red room of pain and you can tie me up and, you know, I'll hang from the ceiling on whatever it was. But
no spoilers, Jen.
At the end. Oh, believe me, those are no plot points. That goes on like every other chapter. But I'm going to fix you at the end. It just bothers me.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about in the beginning of the book, the movie, he didn't realize she was a virgin. Right. And when he realized she was a virgin, he gave her a vanilla kind of typical sexual experience as her first experience, which I appreciated because I sort of thought, all right, that means he's not psychotic. Like,
that's a good
point. Right?
That's very thoughtful.
It was solid. I had a better attachment to his character after he did
Thank you for not beating my ass during my first time.
Right. Because you think about women that their first experience is something that is kind of like BDSM or kind of up and out there, right?
And just in general, I think the first time for women is typically not awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another aspect of the book. Her first time with him was amazing.
Oh, really?
She had an orgasm in like 30 seconds. Like,
wow.
They're like, clearly this is not rooted in reality.
Right.
Probably the least plausible aspect of the plot.
Most likely, potentially.
Potentially.
Yes, I would say so.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of Family Affairs. What's the takeaway today, guys? What did we learn?
We learned that pornography can be helpful and harmful all at the same time. So you need to look at porn wisely. Look at it for educational purposes, to learn things, to take back into your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
See, and I think it's like, kind of like you said, everything in moderation. And there's really no need to feel shame for looking at porn. I think that it can be a normal, typical aspect of people's lives, but moderation.
I think there's bigger issues at hand, and they can express through porn or they can express through 7-layer dip on Pinterest. I don't think it matters what the symptoms are. I think it's about addressing the bigger
issue. It's a compulsion, right? No matter what it is. It's the issue of the compulsion.
And from my perspective, I don't think anyone's to decide what's right or wrong. I think you, as a person in a relationship or as a parent, have to be accountable for your own position and your own standards, and you have to teach your kids. And you're also accountable for your own education and your own knowledge. And one of my biggest gripes in this day and age is when anybody says, oh, well, I did that thing, but I didn't know any better. Nobody told me we shouldn't do it that way. Because I really think that information is everywhere and everyone has access to it equally. All right, that brings us to the end of another episode. Thanks for being here. Bye. Thanks for listening to this episode of Family Affairs.
Please subscribe. Please subscribe through iTunes and give us a great review.
Or you can go fuck yourself.
The sex therapist recommends that you do go home and fuck yourself. Links to resources we mentioned in today's show can be found on our website,
smartstudio.media.
While you're there, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
You can find me, Lisa Thomas, at Lisa the Sexpert on Twitter or onlinecouch.com.
You can find me, Jen Siegel, at Jen Love Stars on Twitter.
And I'm Dick Scurvy on Twitter. Dick Scurvy. Dick. By the way, if you have any questions or stories to share, please feel free to email us at familyaffairs@smartstudio.media.
The views expressed in this program are those of the participants appearing on the show and not those of Smart Studio or its employees. Come back and see what we talk about next week.
Please tune in next week for another great episode.
See you next week. Bye.